Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today. We are planning to visit at the start of the program with Jerry Apps, talented writer, a keen observer of a story setting, whether it's fiction or memories. He's done that for many years, and lucky that he has a new book out for us to enjoy that's really perfect for this season. The book is great. It's called The Quiet Season, Remembering Country Winters. And planning to interview him today, but he isn't here yet. Robin, Jerry, our on-air producer, says, no, she's lifting her hands up. She says, I can't find him, but he may be on his way. That's just, you know, the weather and everything else. That is a very likely possibility that he's on the way. And if we can't get him, we may be able to get him by phone as well if we can't, if he doesn't make it in person. And I hope that'll be the case. However, since he's not here right now, I would like to hear from you. This is something we haven't done for a while and would like to try again, and that's to get your ideas for programs during this hour in the coming year. There's lots. I mean, we got programs scheduled right up through the end of the year, and I think a few programs into the beginning of the year. But there's, about 250 weekdays in the course of a year, and we probably do about 400 topics over the course of a year. And by golly, we like to hear from you once in a while to find out what you're interested in covering or having us cover. So if you'd like to join in and you have a topic idea for the 11 to 12:30 time period, I hope you'll join us at 800-642-1234. And I'll tell you what, if you give a call, or maybe you can email us at talk@wpr.org if you've got a program idea. We'd certainly love to hear from you now. It's 1-800-642-1234. And if Jerry makes it, or if he gets on by phone, we'll just switch over and we'll talk with him. Because I, you know what? He's always a lot of fun to talk with. There's no doubt about that. A lot. His book is about what happens on the farmer in rural communities, or what happened back in the day when he was a kid. And it's a companion to the book, really, to the Wisconsin Public Television program that they put, a special that they put together on Remembering Country Winters. And if you haven't seen it, it's aired a few times already on Wisconsin Public Television. Wonderful, wonderful program. I had a chance to see it, and I mean, there's times in there where I had a little tear in my eye, and then there's other times when you're laughing pretty hard. And I tell you what, it's a wonderful production. And I don't know when it's scheduled again. I'm sure it's scheduled again. But you go to Wisconsin Public Television, take a look online. You're probably going to find online when you're going to be able to see that once more. But again, we're going to take some program ideas from you right now. You can join us at 800-642-1234. And let's take some calls right now. See if I can get myself organized here. And start with Gail in Blue River. Gail, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi there. How are you?
Pretty good. How are you?
Oh, I'm wonderful today. I'd like to suggest having a session on near-death experiences.
Oh, okay.
Now, that topic has really interested me over the years. I have a friend from high school that has had one, and there's all sorts of accounts on YouTube of other people who have had one. So I'd like to see a topic on that.
All right. Thanks very much for calling, Gail. Appreciate it. Near-death experiences. There's been a fair amount actually written about that, and certainly there are a lot of stories out there of people who at least they were brought back from death, and and then had experiences to share. Were those real experiences? Were they somehow not real? I tell you, the people who had them will say they were real experiences. So, topic we've never covered, something that we can certainly look into. What about you? 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call with your question. I should let you know, tomorrow, by the way, is one of my favorite shows, or maybe it's my favorite show of the year. Santa Claus and Mrs. Claus will be taking time out of their very busy schedules to visit us here at Wisconsin Public Radio. And they love to talk to boys and girls when who call in. So that's from 11 to 12:30 tomorrow. And if you've never heard this show in the first place, if you have a youngster, I hope it's only youngsters can call, okay? And call in and talk with Santa and Mrs. Claus about what they want for Christmas. And tell you what, it's it is lovely. It is wonderful. And it's a great show. So, tell you what, we're looking forward to that. And that's tomorrow. And let me see. I may have been able to get Jerry Epps. Robin may have him online here. Jerry, are you there?
I'm here, Larry. I'm here.
All right.
I was stuck in a long line at the post office. I tell you.
Well.
Sorry.
No, that's okay. It's good to hear your voice. You have your shopping all done?
yes, I do.
And you're getting the last of it mailed out today.
Something like that.
Okay. Well, I was talking about your book earlier, and folks, we're gonna stop on the program ideas. So if you've got some ideas, I hope you'll shoot me an email and let me know. And that's easy enough. You can email us at talk@wpr.org and let us know about those program ideas that you have. And in the meantime, we're going to talk with Jerry Epps about his book, The Quiet Season, Remembering Country Winters. And you can call in with your questions or experiences to share. Do you have some memories of winter on the farm, or maybe just winter when you were a kid? Call us at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You know, a lot happens on a farm throughout the cycle of a year. Jerry, why did you pick on or focus on winter?
Well, there are a number of reasons. One is that people tend to badmouth it. And I wanted to show a little bit of the positive features of winter, but probably more importantly, in related to farm life and the life that I had when I was growing up on the farm, we spent three seasons of the year literally preparing for winter. There was no question about it. From spring, summer, and fall, everything that we did, the crops that we planted, the crops that we harvested, all of that was in service to winter. There wasn't any question about it. The big garden that we grew and the food that my mother prepared, all of that was for our own use during the winter. So when I began thinking about all that, I said, "My golly, look at that! We really did spend almost the entire three seasons of the year for that season called winter." And so I wanted to write about that. And then as I got into it, well, it's hard not to remember some of the good things about it, too, because as farm kids going to a country school, we had the Christmas program, of course, which was a highlight of December. We had ice skating and skiing and sledding and snowball fights. And, I mean, it was not a bad time at all.
No, a lot of fun. And you said that. For families like yours and ours, my own family, winter kind of meant slowing down in some ways.
Well, exactly. And that's another part of what I wanted to write about, because we were so busy. I mean, farm people are busy. And when I was growing up, that was true, except during winter, once the morning chores were done, cows were milked and the barn was cleaned and fresh straw put in and all that stuff, we had some free time, especially on the weekends. And that's when we had fun. And we spent a lot, as crazy as it sounds, we spent a lot of time ice fishing. Oh, my gosh. Over Christmas break from school, we went ice fishing every day. And we would get on the lake about 10 o'clock or so, and we'd stay there. And the days are pretty short. We'd yep. stay there until dark, which would be 4:30 or so, and back home in time to do the chores. Now, some days we caught fish. We were fishing for northern pike with tip-ups. And we ate a lot of fish in those days. But there were some days the fish didn't bite. And in those days, you could build a campfire on shore, and we did that. And my uncles and my dad and the neighbors who were ice fishermen, we all sat around this campfire, and we told stories. There was the most magnificent stories. Stories about how other winters were so much colder, and there was so much more snow, and it was so much more miserable. Stories about deer hunting, and stories about catching fish that were, oh, so much bigger than the ones that we could catch now. And they told the same stories over and over again, except every time they told them, they were a little bit longer and a little bit stronger and a little bit more enhanced. And my mother came around and said, those sound like just out-and-out lies you people are telling to each other. She was not in favor of all this stuff. I loved it. I got some of my early experiences with storytelling, listening to these old-timers share these tales around a smoky little campfire.
Oh, man. Jerry Epps, our guest today. Jerry is the author of many books, including the one we're talking about today. It's called The Quiet Season, Remembering Country Winters. You can join in with your own remembrances or your own questions for Jerry. Do you have some memories of wintertime when you were a kid? Love to hear from you at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org. Or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Larry Mueller. Rob and Cherry are on-air producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking with author Jerry Epps about his book, The Quiet Season, Remembering Country Winters. It's a companion book, in a way, I think, to the Wisconsin Public Television special that was produced featuring Jerry and highlighting his experiences in the winter. And, Jerry, that must have been fun to put that together.
Yeah, there was a direct relationship. The Winter on the Farm is the title of the public television documentary. And all of the stories in the documentary are straight out of the book. But one of the interesting little asides, and I tell you this, and you know this very well, doing the back behind the scenes work in radio, but the behind the scenes work in television are just really fun. What we wanted to do was to include in the book, because I have a story about a snowball fight at our country school, yep. and how we had these rules about you should never hit a kid in the head with a snowball and yep. all that kind of stuff. Well, the producer, Mick Dirks, wanted to reproduce that, wanted to film kids in a snowball fight. Well, today, school kids are not allowed even to pick up a piece of snow, for heaven's sake, aside from throwing it at each other. So he finally, it's in the Spring Green School, where Mick lives out that direction, they talked to the principal about that. He said, oh, jeez, you can't do that. Kids can't throw snowballs. We can't have a snowball fight. That's against every rule that was ever written. But then the principal, I think it went something like this, said, well, but if you went over here, maybe you could do that where we weren't so concerned about school property. And so here we have these kids in a snowball fight. They don't even know how to make a snowball. But, man, were they ever having fun. They just having a grand time tossing snow at each other. And, of course, when people watch it, they don't know the background that these kids did not have experience making snowballs as we did as kids. So that's one of the little fun things. There are a lot of other stories related to what happened behind the scenes when we were filming that thing.
Oh, that really was a it's a great production. And I've watched it, and I mentioned earlier before we got on with you that I had a little tear in my eye at least in one point, and some great laughing at other points in the show.
Well, what I tried to do in the book and in the show is to show both the very positive features of winter and how it affected people, and also some of the downside. And I'm talking about the latter years of the Depression and World War II. That was my growing up years. And things were not all that great in this country, whether you lived in the city or on a farm. And so I tried to balance the fun times that we had with the fact that some of our neighbors were so terribly poor. None of us had electricity. We heated our homes with wood stoves. We milked cows by hand. But some of us were better off than others. And at the time, well, we knew that. And I have a story, a Christmas story, really, in the book, and it's in the film as well, about our neighbors, a fellow who'd lost his wife, and he lived alone with his daughter in this really ramshackle old house. He was not a very good farmer to start with, and the land in Washera County where he farmed was especially stony and sandy and not very conducive to making very much money. Anyway, my folks, my mother especially, always said at Christmas time that my two brothers and I have twin brothers, 3.5 years younger than I, that we should go down and visit with the Davis family. Alan Davis was the fellow's name. And she would bake a pie, and she would buy a couple of simple little gifts for the Davis family. And so my brothers and I, they lived about a mile from us, so we would walk down there on Christmas Day. And when we arrived, they were so happy to see us. Oh, my gosh. There wasn't a sign of Christmas. No Christmas tree, no decorations, no Christmas cards around, nothing. They were so pleased to see us on Christmas Day, and we gave them the pie, and they said thank you. Mm. And then my mother had these two little presents, work gloves for Alan and a frilly little handkerchief for his daughter, Catherine, who must have been in her 20s at that time. And I have never forgotten how appreciative they were of these presents and how they said, be sure and tell your mother and dad thank you for the pie and for the presents. And I knew that's all that was the only Christmas they had. And Catherine, when she said thank you, and I have trouble even telling the story, had tears rolling down her face.
Oh, man.
It was one of the most, it's a memory that I have never forgotten
I
about Christmas and how there's more to it than a pile of presents.
Yeah. Well, it's certainly a touching part of the movie of the production, and one that we can all kind of take a little lesson from. I want to give Kathy and Oshkosh a chance to join in. Kathy, hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Mr. Apps, your book has done exactly what I hoped, and most probably what you hoped. I'm reading it to an elderly friend, and it got him started talking about the farm, which he never wanted to do. And then I took the story to an exercise class, and a gentleman who never talks started telling about growing up on the farm in southwestern Minnesota. So thank you so very much for this gift.
You are entirely welcome. And that has happened again and again and again, both with the people who have seen the film. This is the second one. I did one last year, too, called A Farm Story.
Yep.
And it's unbelievable, but that show ran on 65 PBS stations in 49 states.
Yeah.
And I got emails from almost every state, and many of them included, I want to tell you a little of my story.
Yeah.
It didn't matter if they're from Florida, New Hampshire, Colorado, Southern California, wherever. I'm unbelievably humbled by all of that.
Yeah, it's wonderful. Carrie in Milwaukee, thank you for joining in. Hi.
Hi. Hello?
Yes, hi. What's on your mind?
Oh. Yeah, I'm Terry.
Yeah.
And, yeah, we grew up in Milwaukee, on the northwest side of Milwaukee, where 76, which is now a major thoroughfare, was just a two-lane highway. And we were the pretty much the farthest neighborhood north out of Milwaukee. And when I was probably like 7 or 8 years old, we had a big snowstorm, and we had a couple of school buses that got stuck on 76th Street. And, I mean, they just literally came to a halt, and it was like a blizzard, and they couldn't get home. And we were the first house down the road in our neighborhood. And so we went up there, and we got all these kids out of these buses, and then the neighborhood took these kids in. And, you know, my mom was a hardworking mom. We had five kids, and pretty much this was the last thing she wanted to do. But we were so excited to have all these 5- and 6-year-old kids overnight. And it was, you know, it just was a very fun memory.
Oh.
Yeah, there are so many stories like that. When I started high school, and I'll give it all away. I'll give my age all away when I say this. I started high school in 1947, and that's the first year that Wildrose High School had school buses. And the school district didn't buy them. The principal did. He owned Bill Ingebrigtsen was his name. He owned two of them, and they were red, white, and blue, by the way, in color. If you want a trivia question point to make. But I can remember, and of course there were no radios or any communication, and we would cover miles of countryside, we were so often on winter days we were literally stuck in a snowdrift just out of Plainfield, where the land is flat and the wind blows and the drifts accumulate, and I tell you, to roust out a neighbor who had a tractor or a team of horses to pull the school bus out of a snowbank. Those are not pleasant experiences. To this day, I have disdain for school buses.
Gary,
that was in the 60s where I was growing up. So
yeah, well, the 60s were so modern compared to the 40s.
Thank you, Gary. Appreciate your call. Oh, man. You can join in, too, with your questions or stories. We'd love to hear from you at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. You have a call. We'll get you on pretty quickly. And you can email us as well at my email address, talk@WPR.org, or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Miller Show. I had a good time talking with your daughter recently on the air about one-room schools, and you mentioned the Christmas program, Jerry. You write about the Christmas program at school, and that was the biggest deal of the year.
It surely was, and of course, Susie, hearing my stories, was, I don't know if she was impressed, but she found it really interesting as a school teacher herself, the fact that the Christmas program in those days was indeed the highlight. And in fact, many of the country school teachers, if they did not put on a first-rate program, they knew the chances for their contract being renewed the following year that was in jeopardy. So they pulled out all of the stops. And I have more stories about Christmas programs than you would ever want to know. And I have one in my book that I talk about, but I have another one that I just want to share quickly because
sure.
It's so fun. Our school, of course, when I was in first, second, third, fourth grade, even it didn't even have electricity. It was heated with a wood stove and had outhouses and all that kind of stuff. And mice found their home in the school, as they found their home in all kinds of rural buildings. And we had this old broken down piano that was up in the front of the schoolroom, and somehow mice had built a nest in this piano, and of course, what's to build a nest out of in a piano but the felt? where the stoppers hit. And so the piano, when it was played, it alternately sounded like a honky-tonk barroom piano or what an out-of-tune piano was supposed to sound like because the thing had never been tuned. Well, anyway, on the Christmas program, and in those days, we did the nativity scene, and there would be Joseph dressed up in a bathrobe and Mary with a sheet overhead, and some kind of a naked little naked doll in a sawbuck with some straw, and everybody would sing Away in a Manger, and this was a serious deal, and the teacher warned us. She said, "Oh, well, when we're doing the nativity scene, there will be no giggling, there will be no laughing, there will be no nothing," because we had a tendency to tease each other when we were on the, somebody was on the stage, we'd cross our eyes and stick out our tongue and all that kind of stuff. That was now verboten, we could not do that. Well, no, the Mary is in place and Joseph is in place and we're beginning to sing Away in the Manger. And it was, the schoolroom was quiet. And then out, peering out from the top of the piano was a mouse. Who was disturbed, of course, by the piano playing. My gosh. So it crawled out, and it crawled on the piano, and it crawled up on the stage.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, the teacher could not see this mouse, but she heard the titter, the little laughter coming from the audience. The ones in the front could see the mouse. This was an atheist mouse disturbing this high-level Christian event.
Oh, my goodness.
And before you knew it, the whole crowd was just absolutely hooting. It was the funniest program they'd seen in years. And finally, the teacher looked around, and she saw the mouse, too. And so somebody with a school board got a broom, and they went after the mouse. And the mouse went then running down, and there were screeches from the girls, and the babies were crying, and they ushered the mouse out the door. And we all went back to singing Away in the Manger.
Oh, man. Jerry Apps, our guest, author of many books, including the one we're visiting about today called The Quiet Season, Remembering Country Winters. And it's a fun book. And it's the publisher is Wisconsin Historical Society Press, by the way.
That is correct.
Phyllis in Brookfield, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, and Merry Christmas to you and your lovely author, who has really reawakened such lovely memories for me. I was growing up in the 40s. I'm the same vintage as your author. I graduated from high school in 46. But anyway, as I remember, we would go up to my Grandpa Abraham's farm near Partyville and get a tree the first weekend of December. And I did that with my dad and my siblings. Then I took my children, my sweet husband and I took our seven children, and we would go up and get a tree. And this past December, I went up there with my children, my grandchildren, and my great-grandchildren to get a tree again. So that's a real vintage-type memory that you've reawakened in me. I love you for it.
That's a wonderful memory, and I have a similar one. My dad and brothers and I would go to the back end of our farm and look for a Christmas tree, and we did that for a number of years. Well, I still have a farm a couple miles from where I grew up. And my daughter, Susan, who wrote the school book, and her son, my grandson, Ben, and I went up and we picked out Christmas tree for them, Christmas tree for us, Christmas tree for my son, Steve, and Natasha. Three Christmas trees we found in one day. And what fun it was. The storm, this one's not quite right. This one doesn't look right because none of them are sheared. I've run a tree farm. I've got thousands of trees. But they're none of them are perfect. Trees don't grow perfect. They all have, just like people, don't grow perfect. Neither do trees. But the fun of it is to pick out one that seems to fit both in size and in personality the family where it will sit for 2-3 weeks.
Oh, that's great. Phyllis, thank you. Appreciate it very much. And Brian in Dorchester. Hi, thank you for calling.
All right, Dorchester.
Yes.
Yeah, my mother-in-law is 90, and she often tells us when they were kids and teenagers, they would tie a rope to the car bumper and they'd get their skis on and get pulled down the road by a car on skis. And some of the more courageous daredevils would even get up on the snowbank. Back then, they kind of make a shelf up there on the snowbank that would be somewhat level, and then they would ski up there, too, being pulled by a car.
Oh, man. Jerry, did you ever have that experience?
No, tell you the truth, we didn't do a whole lot of driving of cars in the wintertime. We did a lot of walking, and our old 36 Plymouth, well, it didn't start all that well. Never, it didn't start in warm weather. The colder it got, the worse it was. So we saved that for driving to town on Saturday afternoon in the wintertime, generally once a week. But no, we did a lot of skiing, but we did. I didn't do this, but some of the kids skied behind a bobsled. That's a similar kind of experience, but without the exhaust fumes.
Thanks, Brian. Thanks a lot for calling. Well, the mother-in-law, over 90, she survived. She must have survived well.
Yeah, really.
Oh, Rosella in Fort Atkinson, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I probably have the oldest story that I experienced, let's put it this way. It was in the mid-1930s, probably about 1935, and I went to a country school in La Crosse County. And anyway, there were no school buses. Everybody just walked. However, that cold day, my two little friends, their father, came by with them on this, with a horse, a team of horses, pulling this bobsled. And anyway, they were huddled in back, and I got in with them. And anyway, we were the only ones at school that day. And the schoolhouse was relatively new and it had been built in 1926. And it had a furnace in the basement of the school. And there was a great, quite a large place where the heat came out in the main room.
Mm-hmm.
And so the teacher managed to get there that day. Don't ask me how she did it. But anyway, because she lived in the adjacent town. And so anyway, the three of us kids and the teacher huddled around where the heat came out there. And I don't know I don't know that we accomplished too much. But anyway, that was quite an experience. I can't remember. I'm sure their father picked us up again, but I can't remember that part.
Well, what a day, huh, Jerry?
Well, yes. In fact, people say to me, you must have had a lot of snow days when you went to the country school. And I said, no, I don't recall in 8 years of attending the Channel Lake public school in the town of Rose that it ever closed for anything. I mean, it was a school day, whether it was 20 below zero or a blizzard. But I do remember it referring to what we did on those really cold days. By the way, the teacher boarded, as the language we use, just across the way. She was only a quarter of a mile away, so she was always there early. We didn't have a furnace. We had a wood stove in the back, so she would come early, start the wood stove. Well, on those really cold days when it was, I don't know, 30 below zero, it was about that cold in the school, I expect, when the teacher got there. And by the time we got there, it was still colder than anything. And one of the things that she would do, which I would never forgotten, and it made no sense to me at the time at all, we had a Victrola. Now, that's something for people who are of my vintage know all about, and today's person, young people, doesn't have a word clue what that means. You wind the thing up, you put a record on it, 78 RPM record, and she had John Philip Sousa marches. And she would put on a John Philip Sousa march on the Victrola, wind it up, and we would all march around the schoolroom. I thought it was the dumbest thing in the world. What she was doing was trying to warm us up enough so we could do our lessons. We all sat around the stove the whole day, I tell you. But there weren't any storm windows, and a wind came in. No doubt, it was terrible.
Oh, man, good story. And Rosella, thank you for calling. I want to give John a chance to join in. John in Prairie du Sac. Hi.
Hi there. I'm about the same age as Jerry because I went to school in the 40s and remember when we got electricity and running water. But I want to tell you a story about a pony we acquired when my brother and I were about 8 and 10 years old. This was a really cold winter day, and she'd gotten away from out of the barnyard and gone down the road about a half a mile to a haystack where there were some other horses accumulated. And on the way home from school, Dad, one of us boys had to ride the pony back home. So my brother and I were always in contest with each other, and in this case, I won, I thought. And I got on the back of his pony riding home into a west wind, and my face just about froze. I was so cold, I turned around and rode backwards. The pony knew exactly where to go because we headed down the road that we rode on all the time anyway. So he headed in at home when we got there, and that was the end of that. But we didn't have ice. We didn't have river or water much close to us, Jerry, but we did have a lot of snow and a lot of cold.
Like oh, yeah.
Now, that had to be quite a sight to see old John riding backwards on his pony.
With his freezing as he was going along. Yeah, the frostbite was a problem, of course. My grandmother, Witt, was a knitter, and she would knit a big scarves for us. And the only thing, when we walked to school on those really cold days, the only thing that you could see were our eyes. Everything else was covered up. Frostbite was a problem. And we, the first, and teachers in those days were multi-skilled. The first thing the teacher would do when the kids would arrive would be to check them for frostbite. Isn't that something?
Yeah.
We wouldn't think of that. We would never give that a thought today. But that was the first thing she would check for.
Well, Jerry, how's the book sale going? Is it?
You know, it's out. The first printing is completely sold out.
Oh,
I couldn't believe it. In fact, I'm boasting now more than we Germans ought to. but Kathy Burkowski, who heads up Wisconsin Historical Society Press, called me and she said that it had sold 1,100 copies in one day.
Oh, man.
Which I've not had any books sell that fast. But the TV show has helped it immeasurably, and it also was a book club selection for the Wisconsin State Journal. And they've run several pieces about it. And I've given a number of talks all over the place on winter. It surprised me beyond belief because I almost gave up on the book at one time. My editor, Kate Thompson, and it encouraged me to do it. And I, when I began writing it, it wasn't working. And I contacted Kate and I said, I think we should dump this project. It's not going to work. Little do I know.
Well, it's a great book and a great story, Jerry. And I thank you so much for sharing it with us. And I'm sure you got some other things in the works.
I surely do. Yeah.
Well, we'll visit again.
I missed the first couple of minutes.
Oh, it's all right. No problem. Thanks, Jerry.
Yes, thank you.
Jerry Apps is the author of many, many books, including his latest, The Quiet Season, Remembering Country Winters. Great book. And I hope you're going to stay tuned because coming up next, we're going to talk with another author about the backstory and the historical context of A Christmas Carol. I'm telling you, it's fascinating. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.